Episode number 42 of Consistently Above Average is here. Summer holidays are finally over. Episode number 42, but funnily enough, 43 days since the last podcast episode of Consistently Above Average. And we are kicking off September and a nice run to the end of the year. I have discussed this in different episodes ad nauseum. The ups and downs you can go through, and that discipline and consistency will beat motivation. But I will admit, during the summer, I allowed motivation to get in the way a little bit in terms of the production of this podcast. If you apply the same thing towards your training, I find it very easy to train most days, at least to try and do something most days. Since we've last spoken, I do feel that I have been particularly switched on despite a couple of setbacks. So whether that's like small injuries, bigger injuries, should you go and get that looked at, what are they going to say? They're either going to say it's this or it's that, and then you won't be able to do anything regardless. My future opponents obviously will go a step beyond studying me in Instagram and they'll listen to old episodes of my podcast. But essentially, two potential fractures at different points, or breaks, or maybe nothing, or bruising, or something in a bad area, blah, 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 blah. And it was pretty tough to feel that you were improving in terms of training if you can't distribute weight, grip properly, do different stuff like that. Just frustrating last little while. That frustration transfers over into when you're in this position here with a microphone live in front of you, when you're trying to talk, when you're trying to talk about stuff. Like, this podcast has never really been, oh, I'm going to talk about what happened in the last week of jiu-jitsu. You're not reporting on news, not really reporting on event coverage, discussing jiu-jitsu gossip, interviewing people every week. So in my internal perspective, it does come down to motivation a little bit at the time. And like, as I said before, you're sitting here in front of a microphone by yourself, then you have to try and like turn it on. Do you know, you have to be this broadcaster, be this presenter. I'm even consciously aware of how I'm speaking now. And yeah, over the last 42 or so days, that just was not the thing that I particularly wanted to be doing. Now, somebody did make a joke about it. You sold a load of t-shirts and then stopped doing weekly episodes. Yes, I've lied to you for the last 4 minutes. The reality is I went on the absolute rip. I've developed a love for drinking, spent all the money, don't have any money for tournaments booked. I'm not going to compete again for the rest of the year. The injuries are fake, and I'm going to release more shirts to try and now get myself back into the perspective of wanting to be able to compete again. So, weirdly enough, the thing that actually felt the most frustrating over the last couple of weeks is that because I was able to get those tournaments booked so far in advance, much more efficiently than usual. And again, I know that we had Chris Letty on the last episode and stuff like that. So maybe I didn't actually get to like turn around and properly say like, thank you so much to everyone who did buy a shirt. Sorry to those who did miss out on certain sizes. There will be some sort of restock in the next couple of weeks. But this was like one of the most empowering feelings that I've gotten through jiu-jitsu in the last couple of years. People wanting to support you in, like, fair enough, they got a nice shirt out of it, I'm not denying that. But like genuinely wanting to support you and being able to help you go to these tournaments, that actually put a little bit different in terms of like an effect on me. Like, oh, someone's actually supporting me because they want me able to go and do this tournament, compete here. So now I need to train more. I need to work harder. Ambling podcast conversations are the secondary thing here. It's the training and the preparation that needs to get the priority, which was then also compounded by like you're injured and you can't actually do these things properly right now. And your head will just go into a muddle. I genuinely felt that I was literally just going on a day-by-day basis. Like, I'm sitting here now on a Sunday afternoon after being awake since like 6 o'clock this morning. Was out for a walk, had a nice breakfast, had a nice coffee, have spent the majority of the day deep cleaning, which may be what you should do every Sunday, to be honest. I have no extra washing waiting to be done, all training gear done, put away, whatever. And I suppose, like, sometimes, at least in my case, my recording studio here can often reflect maybe a state of mind. And you're just like, as long as I have what I need for tomorrow done, I don't care about what is around me right now. So as long, in my head, I was like, have I got clean clothes for tomorrow? Have I got clean training gear for tomorrow? What is more important is the thing that's happening in 4 weeks' time, the thing that's happening in 8 weeks' time, the thing that's happening in 14 weeks' time. Have I got what I need for tomorrow? If the answer is yes, then step over those towels and just keep going about with your day. So it has been up and down in that sense, and I'm glad to be back. And I didn't want to kind of like just jump in out of nowhere at the time to be like, oh, you haven't heard from me in a while and don't really want to be chatting about this or going on about this right now. But we passed the 1 year birthday of the podcast. That was back in August. Where I wanted to be after 1 year versus where I actually ended up was actually ahead of schedule. So that was a nice thing. I thought to myself that I released 41 episodes out of 52 potential weeks. Not too bad. The definition of that would be consistently above average, which was a nice little thought as well. There are plenty of elements where I could have been further ahead, and that is the catch-up goal between now and maybe end of the year, the next 6 months. So that's basically in a nutshell. Obviously, there are people who listen to this from around the world, or people who maybe don't know me in real life. There are people that know me in real life. They have seen maybe the amount of tape and annoyance that has been on my body for the last couple of weeks and how it has affected different elements of training. Even just like things that maybe wouldn't have previously bothered me as much outside of the sport of jiu-jitsu, now bothering me a little bit more because I wasn't able to just focus on the sport of jiu-jitsu, if that makes sense. And the two main things that have happened since we were last talking was myself and John Luca ran another training day in Uri. We had 70 people show up on the day, which was far more than we expected. We are both terrible businessmen. We made about £50 profit from running the day. Not that profit is the thing, but literally thanks to two particular donations that were made on the day, we would have been in the red. There is a cost in organizing the curry, the refreshments, the fruit. We're not paying ourselves for the time to set it up before or after. My mate, who has absolutely nothing to do with jiu-jitsu, was with me for 3 hours the night before, helping me give a deep clean to the place ahead of people coming down to come and train. It took me about 4 hours afterwards, after everyone had gone, between the disgusting situation on the mats, in terms of the sweat that we collected and the moisture, cleaning showers, cleaning the change rooms, emptying and changing bins, all the rubbish, cleaning the walls from the sweat, wiping everything down, getting everything back and ready for class the following day. And if I am thinking out loud right now, which is what this podcast often seems to be most of the time, we are currently stuck between a rock and a hard place. We think that if we do another one, it could be busier, but we don't know how many more people we could fit into that venue. So we have already explored the idea of renting a venue, which in turn would require mat rental, insurance, venue hire costs, which would mean that we couldn't risk doing it off a donation-based thing. And maybe even the other day, the last time we did it, we could have been a little bit more suggestive about donations and told people about it more, and look, here's the bucket with donations written on it. Even within the thought, like, if we're like using or renting a gym or a facility, there are unexpected costs that come up with that, like in terms of if we didn't want to clean it and we wanted to get a set of cleaners to come in, if the like different stuff like the rising cost of electricity. That can have a huge contributing factor. Like if you've got showers going on for a lot longer than people would have thought, like all of these things evidently do add up. So if we did go down the venue side of things where you don't have to worry about changing rooms being cleaned or people having showers, then you're kind of losing the atmosphere of what we enjoyed happening with the days and with the events. We have been asked if we would consider going to other gyms to run these days for their own students, which would be financially beneficial for us, but not in the spirit of why we had started to do them. We could keep trying to do them, where we encourage like a minimum donation of X amount of pounds or euros, which may affect the numbers, and then it would end up leaving us short anyway. We've thought about you could sell an online ticket or RSVP so we know exactly who's going to come so we can plan it better. Then it's inevitable you'll get people who'll turn up on the day or people who couldn't make it because of something happening on the day. And you never want to be the fellow who turns someone away on the day because they didn't click your link on Instagram to say that they were going to come or not. So the decision, I have little notes made here of when I recorded this, wrote this during the week. I was going to say the decision will be made in the next week or so anyway, because John was going to be doing ADCC trials this weekend. He was flying to Poland the day that I was writing these notes out. He also has a big match against Michael Pixley on Grapplefest, and all going to plan, apart from the side that he gets put in his hole against Michael Pixley. We are going to New York in the first week of October for a Pan Ams. So if I am looking at this crystal ball that's in front of me right now, my gut is telling me that in Newry, again, if we can get the gym available on a Sunday that doesn't clash with something to do with like MMA, Thai boxing, different things that happen in our gym on Sundays, I would say that we will run another training day at some point in September. So if you're listening, you were at the last one, or you want to come to the next one, make sure you keep an eye on social media for a date drop in that regard. If not, we would like to at least be able to get one more before the Nogi Europeans, which is at the end of October. And that is hopefully something that we'll be able to tell you a little bit more about in the next little while. So last weekend as well, we had the return of the Craig Jones Invitational. And there's been some amount of reaction to this whole thing over the course of those 7 days since. If there is one thing that I don't get, I understand like maybe on the Sunday that there wouldn't have been as many people still floating around. But considering that they advertised it so heavily that it was going to be live and free on YouTube, I think that this was a huge thing. Like at the time of writing these notes, at the time, like the 2 days combined, I think it's now over 3 million total views on Flow Grappling's YouTube. So there is an interest there. Now add in social media impressions, reels, content. I'd imagine well over 10 million impressions has happened since the CGI event. Now, the IBJJF were also running the Masters Worlds Championships as well as Jiu Jitsu Con. And this was on in the same city at the same time, but it was on over the course of a couple of days. So I just wonder if having it on Saturday and Sunday meant by the time the Sunday came around, you were expecting or needing people to commit to another evening in Las Vegas so they could go home on the Monday instead of maybe, just for talk's sake, I think last year they might have had it Friday and Saturday. And I think that could have helped a little bit more with crowd, with people who are there already for the tournaments and saying like, yeah, we'll go to CGI that evening. So just in terms of Masters Worlds as well, we won't be doing an in-depth on it. Marty McLaughlin, Team Tyrus Derry, Silver, Master 4, middleweight division after, or middle heavy division after 5 matches. He's an absolute legend. It's something that if we get him on the podcast one day, we will talk with him about this at length. A brilliant run, but we're talking about CGI for the moment. I do think that considering how many jiu-jitsu related people there were in Las Vegas, they should have been able to boast about, yeah, this was a sellout in terms of the numbers. However, the other side of it, like if we're saying that even if they were there, the majority of the athletes competing, because it was Masters Worlds, were Masters competitors. Potentially a lot of people who brought partners family, or kids. They made the trip, end of summer vacation, a weekend in Las Vegas. You're not getting away in a family setting, being and competing at a tournament most of the day and then going to watch another jiu-jitsu tournament that evening. That is probably the one-way ticket to marital distress or relationship discomfort. That is for the 20-something-year-olds who are doing jiu-jitsu con or whatever, not the 52-year-old blue belt from Wisconsin who headed to Vegas to do Worlds with his wife and two young kids. But it did get me thinking, and I would be fat, like, just as an experiment, I would love to know how something like a Polaris card or a CGI card might do. For example, Lisbon, Friday, during the weekend of the Europeans, or a CGI type event in California, the weekend of the Gi World Championships. However, and maybe unfortunately, the reality is that Las Vegas is just the perfect spot for something like this to happen. It's why they have such big, huge convention centers. It's why they can cater for thousands upon thousands of people coming in and out of a city to stay in hotels and casinos on a daily basis. I'm just not sure what more they could have done to get the rest of the venue full. Now, it did look quite busy on the broadcast by the time Sunday evening came around. And I'm sure that even though there were visibly empty seats, a lot of, if not the majority, may have well been bought. If you believe the sentiment of Reddit users online, a lot of people seemed happy to purchase a ticket, watch it home for free so they could help the event happen and then continue to happen maybe next year. Now, there was also the announcement from Craig the day or so beforehand that Flow Grappling had stepped in a certain way to help secure that the event would turn a profit. And then there was the announcement from him as well that between days 1 and 2, an anonymous donor had made more money available for extra submission bonuses due to the online reaction of the jiu-jitsu community to the first day and how it went. And then, of course, there was the subsequent controversy after the winner being announced, and then the anonymous donor putting more money forward so that Team New Wave could also get $1 million, as well as B Team as well. But there are two elements of this event in particular that I want to talk about. One is the public perception of the event, and the other is the Craig Jones element of it. I personally do like when people say that they would like to make jiu-jitsu more of a spectator sport, and having more eyeballs on the product is not necessarily a bad thing, but it is a hard thing to do. Because the counter argument to that is that the majority, the overwhelming majority of people who will watch jiu-jitsu events are people who are practitioners of jiu-jitsu events. I have this long-running theory that the majority of MMA fighters would rather be professional kickboxers or professional Thai boxers. They would not want to be mixed martial artists. It's just that the UFC is the creme de la creme. The UFC is where they're going to make the most amount of money. And also the fact that it's such more of a diverse sport. Like, I heard a statistic the other day from Paddy Donovan, who's boxing Lewis Crocker for a world title in Windsor Park next weekend, that you have 10 times the likelihood of becoming a Premier League footballer than a world champion in boxer. If you consider the amount of people that have been world champions in boxing versus the amount of people that have been Premier League footballers. Like, there is such like a huge disparity in terms of the numbers of people who've played in the Premier League versus people who've held world titles in boxing. So, like, what I'm saying about my mixed martial arts and UFC point is that, like, there is a thought process in some of these people that it's like, you're not a real man unless you stand in front of someone and give yourself a concussion and be willing to trade and get knocked out. And that, oh, sure, why are you hugging them? Look at them, they're only hugging them. And different things like that. Which means that if the option was there for these individuals to make as much money in kickboxing or Thai boxing or some form of hybrid sport, they would do that. However, they are bound to the realities of, this is where the money can be made, therefore I will tolerate the hugging and whatever, And if I lose against a hugger, then I can just say that they were afraid to fight me, X, Y, and Z. This is a discourse that you hear, and trust me on this, that you hear quite regularly at a regional, national, international level of the sport of mixed martial arts. So when it comes to a jiu-jitsu event that's offering a prize money and money that is unfathomable to so many people who compete in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, then they are going to do everything to try and win that money, and they really don't care about the entertainment element, because the promoter cares about the entertainment element of it and how it's perceived, get more people watching. The athletes care about, well, I want to win. And that's what it boils down to. It is a sport at the end of the day. It is a sport that somebody is trying to compete in and win in. Like, you cannot slight the person that is trying to win by whatever way necessary, by whatever the rules allow them to win by, whatever tactics they can come up with within the rule set that allows them to win in a certain way. So, like, if we're talking about needing more eyeballs in the product, if we are going to try and do that, you'd need to be not doing jiu-jitsu. There would have to be not doing jiu-jitsu matches. It would have to be some sort of freak show, like Jeopardy type thing. Like, I did see an analysis online where someone said, oh, you should have to change position every 30 seconds if there's no action. Why? Why should you have to do that? So it can be more entertaining, or so it can just be something a little bit different. Or would it make people have to think on their whatever? It's like, it's hard enough to beat one of the best people in the world, even if you're one of the best people in the world. Why on earth would a person agree to a big wheel being spun or a dice being rolled and says, okay, you didn't move quick enough from top half guard, now you have to go bottom mount or get your back taken? Then it wouldn't be jiu-jitsu. They would not be competing in jiu-jitsu. They would be competing in a TikTok, Instagram reel, brain rot culture, limited attention span, not being able to focus on something for more than 45 seconds without being bored or annoyed or irritated. Like, all systems and all rules have flaws, and they also have exploitations. There was one match in particular where a coach was actively shouting, come up on the broadcast, could hear it clear as day, and it's no slight on them at all. Almost certain it was in the Taylor Pearman Dorian Olivares match. Greg Souders was actively shouting at Taylor not to move to turtle, not to move from being flat on his back. Do not try come up from being flat on his back. And this was in respect of Dorian's front headlock, D'Arce, Guillotine, Anaconda, his choking series. Taylor would have to have gone from flat on his back, turned in towards Dorian, given Dorian his best possible chance of submitting his opponent, winning the match. So they knew that if he stays here flat on his back, and if it goes to the time expired, then both people are out. It's a double elimination. Pearman had just taken out Giancarlo Bodoni, so that was a boost for the Team Americas in itself. I don't think there was a single match over the weekend where one particular person had three matches in a row, like where they took out one person, took out a second person, and then lost in the third. It was all took someone out and then you were out the next match anyway by consequence of fatigue or tactics or strategy or whatever. So taking Dorian out in that case would have been beneficial for the numbers. So with 2 minutes left after having his guard passed, why make a technical or tactical decision that could potentially gift the finish to the other person, potentially cost your team money, make the other guy a bonus or money in the process, and give your team less of a chance of winning? Now, fair enough, you're going to lose the decision. You're going to lose the 10-9. I know there's a lot of controversy over how that has been done, but Craig has since released a video with Miha from Legion, who is one of the head judges, explaining the process of, like, you can lose three rounds in an MMA fight, but win the next two 10-8 and you win the fight. And how each match was judged like a fight and not on a match-by-match basis. And I understand there may have been, like, conflicting wording and contracts and stuff like that that would imply otherwise. But that situation is just kind of like what I'm trying to hamper home on. Taylor Pearman had nothing to gain by trying to be exciting against Dorian at that point. but he had everything to gain by taking Dorian out by staying flat on his back. The same situation happened in the final match of the whole event between Nicky Rodriguez and Luke Griffith. Now, a high-profile individual has been online saying, look, he held a pass for 2 minutes and he did nothing or he couldn't do anything. But Nicky Rodriguez was actively and furiously trying to get Luke to turn up onto his side so he could think D'Arce, Guillotine, Anaconda, front headlock series, back take. This is the exact same situation as we previously described. Luke Griffith got his guard passed. Nicky Rodriguez bet the frames. He was in a much better side control. Luke Griffith has no need to try turn up from this position. He's already probably going to lose the match. He cannot afford to get submitted here, guaranteeing his team loses. So when Nicky Rodriguez finally went to mount with less than a minute left on the clock, as expected from a student of John Danaher, the mount escape of Griffith was very, very strong, got him back into a guard, and then the match finished from there. So the bottom side control position in this format with so much money on the line, especially considering how trained front headlock series are in no-gi jiu-jitsu, it means glue yourself to the mat, because if I get submitted, my team is definitely going to be down a point and my opponent is getting an extra 50 grand. And if I stay here and go to double elimination and not get submitted, well, then we might end up getting a decision to win. So the reality is, like, Luke Griffith in this situation had a no-win situation because he was never going to get up from under Nicky Rodriguez, change the position and submit him to guarantee the win, or score enough in theory, like sweep, guard, pass, whatever, like Nicky Rodriguez had done to him, takedown, pass, control. Like, he was never going to be able to do that. So based off the rules and the regulations that were determined, he did what gave him the best chance at the time and in the moment that he was in. And maybe those new wave guys were thinking like, oh, we've already taken three of these matches, we're definitely going to win. Not taking into account, well, if it's a 47-47 draw, it comes down to how the last match goes and X, Y, and Z. There has been so much of an unfortunate problem that has come from this event and potential controversy that Craig has done very well to like address very clearly afterwards, to talk about why this happened, X, Y, and Z. But it also hammers home the point exactly of why he seems so sick and tired of all of this and wants to get out of the sport in the public eye. Because these things are going to happen no matter how or what you make the rule set to be. The overwhelming majority of these viewers are strictly, and this is like has to be in the 95 plus percentile, strictly people who do jiu-jitsu or have an interest in jiu-jitsu or know of a person who's competing. It is really not on the competitors to make sure that the people at home are stimulated watching it. That is not on, the onus of that is not on the competitor. However, it is what the promoter would like. So what the competitor wants versus what the promoter would like are two entirely different things. The competitor wants to win. The promoter would like something exciting. You have rare, again, this would be in the 1 to 2 to 3% of certain athletes who are capable and have the ability to do both of those things. And that is incredibly rare. You cannot fill a tournament full of all of these people because it's just impossible. There are not that many people like that in jiu-jitsu, full stop. So my idea or thought on this would be that the Craig Jones Invitational as a longer term thing might actually not be trying to make the best guys all compete against each other. It would be to get the guys that nobody knows too much about them and where there might be more obvious skill disparities in some of them competing against each other for much, much less money, and create the chaos that you actually want in terms of scrambles, submissions, whatever, to try and make it more spectator friendly. However, the problem with that is you're never going to sell out a venue with that format with a load of people who are not mainstream in the sport, who people don't know. So you have like the ultimate catch 22 situation here, unless you can continue to tweak the rule set to find that sweet spot that not only encourages people, but forces them to not try and play a game or play the rules and create more of an open thing that's viewer friendly. If you get the best in the world, they're going to cancel each other each other out to varying degrees. If you get the unknowns who would throw caution to the wind and try and make their name, you're not going to be able to create as much of a hype, and maybe as many people won't watch it until after the fact. And then you're kind of like, well, why did we spend all that money on a thing that nobody knew who was going to be in the tournament? Now, from my perspective, a person that watches jiu-jitsu events, I enjoyed it regardless. I really did. I think the first one had such a unique element of it. I think going against ADCC helped a lot. I think the build up to that helped a lot. I was personally happy that B-Team got to announce their rebrand, that they got to win the tournament. I think it's a nice closing cycle for them. But in terms of how to finish off this podcast and close it all out, I have never met Craig Jones. I probably never will meet Craig Jones. And outside of the fact that we both like jiu-jitsu, we probably do not have a lot in common at all. Maybe an appreciation for Hilltop Hoods might be about the stretch of it. But now that the dust has settled and that we've seen a lot of this discourse online, there is now probably as many, man, you guys don't appreciate what this guy has done for you and what he's done for the sport. There's probably as many of those comments now as there is of how many negative comments there were during the weekend. And like, I've heard this from people who run events, whatever. This event was free, available to watch on YouTube, giving away the biggest prize money in jiu-jitsu ever, selling tickets to this event, huge amount of people, and people still have found ways to complain about it. There is such an entitled culture, not just in jiu-jitsu, in everything in the world at the moment. The internet allows us to pass comment on stuff, allows us to make jokes about it, allows us to send it into group chats with our friends and say, isn't this a load of shite? And then there are other people who will actively use the internet and say, like, isn't this a load of shite publicly? And then sometimes people can't see the light at the end of the tunnel and realize that there weren't 3 million comments, but there were 3 million viewers. So the people that are complaining are taking up a bigger headspace and importance in your life because they've decided to go to the effort of commenting about complaining. But the overall majority were probably quite content and satisfied with the product. However, and I can tell you from experience, if you're running on endorphins, if you're running on something online and you're consuming feedback for the work that you do, the negative sticks with you a lot longer than the positive. I can guarantee that. The negative sticks with you a lot longer and it stands out a lot more prominent. So now both sides are aware of each other's points. You don't appreciate what you have, and isn't this shit? He should have done this, that, and the other. He should have made a rocket, send it to Mars and have them grappling that. But when it does come down to Craig himself, there's two elements that I will take into consideration of this that I just wanted to give my two cents on. I think that he understands to an excellent degree how the current internet culture works, what appeals to the jiu-jitsu audience by and large. He has developed over the last couple of years with merch, poking fun at the community at large, saying, this is clear, this is what we are, make a laugh about it. Try and belittle yourself so nobody else can belittle you. Your words won't hurt me if I'm already making fun of myself before you got a chance to. You know, the videos, the content, the outrage, the brand has gotten bigger. You're developing merch with different brands. You've got sunglasses with a little bit of a recreational add-on. You have a bigger circle of people around you right now. You have a bigger think tank for your ideas, for want of a better word, that you have to speak to. You're now more contactable by people who need to be involved in the event and need to be able to get at your attention, sponsors, different stuff like that, lawyers, whatever, athletes, coaches, all of this sort of stuff. They need your attention and they need your answer right now. I would say for the last 9 months, there hasn't been a day that that man hasn't woken up to countless DMs from people who felt that what they were asking him at that time was incredibly urgent, WhatsApps, missed calls, emails, or otherwise. All right. Now, add on to the fact that apart from that sort of influence is the attention. You're going to gyms, you're going around doing tours, you're going around promoting it, you've got more people hanging on. You've got those people who'll appreciate the partying side of your lifestyle a little bit more, and that they're all there. Do you know? Where's the party, Craig? Where's this? Where are we going next? Link up here. Yeah, no bother. I'll be there. See you then. Like, that is a very public-facing side of him that he's put out there at the moment. And I can confidently say that is draining. That is something that he has talked about himself, but that will take its toll on you physically and mentally. And why I wanted to then link it into the mental aspect of it, because if you're a Reddit user and have followed his account or his posts over the last couple of years, and you read what he's actually put on Reddit over the last 12 months, this, like, he is much more, in my opinion, open and genuine through text, because he doesn't have to be on. He doesn't have to be this character. He doesn't have to be the guy who's making an Instagram reel wearing Speedos. Like, it's almost like he was able to be much more honest and upfront about his own personal challenges, his life challenges, his health, how hard it was to organize this event, leading up to the event, dealing with managers, dealing with people, dealing with coaches, athletes, whatever. And it brought about a level of burnout that he wasn't expecting. And now he essentially wants to dip away from the sport entirely, for a while at least, before deciding to, will he do an event next year or will he not at all? Is he just so sick of it now that he needs to get out, get his health in line, get all of this? And you can tell to a degree from what he has said, what he's posted. You can go and find this all yourself. This is all online. He's very clearly identifiable on Reddit. He's been let down by a lot of people. He had to manage a lot of situations that he never really wanted to be able to be in a position to manage them to begin with. Has tried to advocate for an all-around better situation in jiu-jitsu. Tried to battle against ADCC last year and has now buried the hatchet with all of those guys. But now a bigger monster has appeared in the form of the UFC. And now that's the battle that he feels like he's maybe swimming against the tide in that sense as well. He's been able to now, since leave B-team, leave it to the guys who will be able to take the benefits of it without him being the guy that's the face of it, the runner, the owner. Even though he's not there most of the time, he was away traveling, seminars, whatever, all of this over the last year. Like, you can see how this is a pressure cooker for a burnout, like in the highest degree. And I don't, like, you kind of like seen it and you heard about it on different podcasts since, like, he left straight away after his match. Like, he didn't watch the B-team and UA final. And apparently he had been dipping in and out around from the event the whole time. And it seemed like he was just so disillusioned with it by the time that it happened that he was like, none of yous understand or know the cost that it took me to put this on. And now yous are all complaining about it. And now yous all think it's shit or it's going bad or X, Y, and Z. And it was like he just couldn't. Like, you've cared about something so much. I equate this to making a good dinner, okay? Two entirely different things, but we'll finish it on that. If you make a dinner that takes hours or it takes you a lot of time, like, you actually care more about, does the person that you're making it for like it, rather than are you going to get to eat it yourself? It's like presenting a plate of food to someone that took you a couple of hours to make a meal or something. It's like, well, did you like it? And they say, yeah, it was lovely. It was amazing. It was the best dinner I've ever had in my life. That is more important to you as a person than you getting the food yourself. Like, it's the stereotypical discussion of painters have houses that don't have good painting done in them. Chefs eat takeaways, caffeine, cigarettes, drugs, drink, because they're too busy making sure that you have all of this stuff done. Do you know? Online personal trainers, same thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, stereotypical traditional martial arts school owners don't necessarily look like athletes themselves. Like, all of these things are, like, these people spend so much making sure that you get your thing that they don't really care about if they get their thing or their fulfillment from it. And I really think that that's what has happened to Craig over the last couple of weeks. For what it's worth, I think there might be a Craig Jones Invitational number 3, but as of right now, with ADCC next year, Mo Jassim not having involvement in it, it being back in Poland, it's going to be in a big venue in Poland. I think it will sell out. I think it will be pretty huge. It may not have the bells and whistles production that the last 2-3 events have had, but I still think it's going to be big. Him not having the foil of an enemy to cross promote against or to compete against, as well as the emergence of UFC BJJ, we do not know how that is going to go. I did hear in a podcast that the person in charge of UFC BJJ is also the same person who's in charge of running UFC Fight Pass, which may mean that the UFC are going to go further all in on this as deals expire and lapse over the next couple of months. So let's wait and see when it comes to that. If he does it, I don't think it won't clash with anything else, and I think it's going to be a different format entirely, and I think things will change in that regard anyway. But Flow Grappling, who are previously the enemy of the state, the enemy, the elephant in the room, seemingly come in clutch, helped to save the event. Craig worked with them, kept it free on YouTube. Then people give off on Reddit being like, oh, it's gone, I can't watch it now, it's Tuesday and I can't watch it. And he was like, okay, let me talk to them. And now it's back up on YouTube for free. So this is really like a can't win scenario for Craig Jones, it seems like, over the last little while. And that is the end of CJI discussion, because ADCC trials were yesterday. And I do want to keep artificially bumping the numbers of this podcast. So we are going to do a European trials breakdown over the next couple of days. I watched most of it as much as I could. Had training and stuff yesterday morning, but spent... funnily enough, didn't watch any of the finals matches live because I went training again instead. It is such a long day. But the whole bracket throughout the course of the day, there were some very good stories. There were some very good breakthrough performances, some big losses. And we'll chat about that on the next episode, which will be coming later on this week. So appreciate you sticking around for the last 40 minutes or so. Coming back after the little break of the podcast, I will never take another 43-day break between episodes. I can guarantee you that much. That is us sealed and locked in until now and Christmas. And then we'll take stock again from that point on and see if we're going to continue the sprint to 100 episodes of consistently above average. Thank you very much to everyone for listening, for tuning in, following us on social media if you're not already. I will unashamedly announce that, and it's nothing to do with me starting up these episodes again, that the t-shirts will be back on sale at some point in September, because the butter t-shirt, the cream type colored t-shirt, there was never a small size available for that. We only had a limited amount of small and mediums in the faded coal as well to begin with due to stock. So there will be a full stock resale, all sizes, both colors, no limits on how many we have. And that'll be sometime in September. And we'll see what we can do with that. But that's a separate point for another day. Thanks for tuning in, and I will talk to you again in a few days' time. Good luck.